Where's everybody? Okay.
Okay, so, well, I know where the Gemara is at, because the Gemara is on where Daf Mem Hey Amud Aleph, and we're discussing the case of somebody ends up going outside of the Tchum. How does that work out? So we're, again, on Mem Hey Amud Aleph towards the top of the page. So we were talking about the, when you, getting your Tchum. And if you left, you're only supposed to get Daven Amot. You mean you lost your 4,000, you get replaced with only with your 2,000, you get replaced only with 4, which is a very, you know, significant change in the amount you're allowed to walk. But if you happen to close up to the border, Rabbi Eliezer had said that you could still come back in as long as you're within two Amot, because that means that we recenter it with you at the center, and therefore you'll be able to return. So, Merle Rabba Barbarchana Labaye. So, Barbarchana is questioning within the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer of the being able to go back into the tchum. So, midi Rabbi Eliezer kamotavta leilamar. Wait. So, what's the problem we have with the statement of Rabbi Eliezer? Merle in Shmieli in a demark. I also heard ad kam apligi rabbanan ale to Rabbi Eliezer elal adavarisha. Well, the mitzvah module. As far as we're talking about havlat tchum, and if can your tchum overlap or not, and therefore get you back to the place you wanted to be. So we said that the Rabbanan argued only if you left the tchum of your own volition to do something that wasn't required, that wasn't a mitzvah. Right? If you went for a mitzvah purpose, such as for going to testify about the new month, if you're to save somebody's life, then you would be allowed to go right back in, and Havakum would definitely apply it, even according to Chamin. But if you simply went because you're going for a stroll and you misplaced how far it was, then you would not be allowed back in. Okay, so now the Mishnah stated when everybody goes out to save people's lives, they can go back to the original location. Vilutuva, does this mean that they can go even more than 2,000 amot? Does that, like, does this mean that you have that? Let's say if you had travel, let's say, right? So a meal, 2,000 amot is roughly a kilometer. So let's use kilometers for ease of use in this case. So you're saying that you can even travel if you had 10 kilometers, you can go 10 kilometers back, which is way farther than the 12. So Muhammad Resha, I'll climb Amma too low. But doesn't the first half of the Mishnah say that you only get 2,000 Amot and no more? So how do you say that you can go as far as you want? So what it means is that they're allowed to bring their weapons with them and when they're returned to their original location. And why are you saying that? Remember the case that the Mishnah is pointing out about the returning with your weapons is referring to the case of if you're going to do Eidu Kachodesh, you're going to testify by the new month. That's where we give you the allowance for the weapons. But maybe you'd say that that's only because, and you get only 2,000 armor and weapons in there. But as in for the case of saving somebody's life, maybe we'll give you even more generous. Much the Hatzil Shani, because saving somebody's life is more important. Therefore, you can get even more 2,000 armor, and you'll be allowed to return home afterwards. No, here's the real question. The problem is that in the very beginning of the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, it says that initially the people who came to give testimony wouldn't ever leave, which implies that once you left your tchum, even for the purpose of the mitzvah, you don't get to the drama. Then what happened? So then Hidgin Rabbi Gamliel Hazake and Shiyesh Lan Alpayim Amot Kol Ruach. And then Rabbi Gamliel made a tikkana that everybody has 2,000 Amot surrounding where they arrived. Below Elu Bilvad Amru, not only did you say this, La Filu Chachamaha Bali Alain, Nabala Tzil Min Agayiz, Min Anah, Min Mapolit, Min Adleka, Hare, Elu Kachay Air, Vyesh, Tanapai Nam, El Kol Ruach. We would have eliminated the Kana by extending the Tchum for those who came to give testimony and came to save people's lives. So he says many things, but he does not say at any point is he at no point does he actually allow us to he only allows us 2,000 amot, right? So he says 2,000 amot from where you arrived to, then like it implies that also the case of a midwife, she would give birth to a woman, save somebody from soldiers, save somebody drowning in a river, and save somebody who's building cloths on them or from a fire. Right, so they get the 2,000 miles out of the city, but they don't get all the way back home. So what do you mean you can return home? How's this about? Like, what's going on here? So Betula, oh, is that really so? Like, that's all they get? Only 2,000? Like, what's Rabbi Gamliel helping us with? Ha'amar, didn't we say in the Mishnah? Come on, Afiyotova, right? But didn't it say in our Mishnah that you get even more than that? You can go all the way home. So, which could be even more than 2,000 amos. So wait, what is it? Amar of Yehuda Amarav. Chodri Mechli Zayin, come on. So what is it trying to, what are we learning out from here? That you're allowed to return to your original location with your weapons in hand. So now we're talking about a case of where we had people here. So this is a, here. So this is from Tosefta that people used to leave their weapons that they would use whenever they wanted to go save people or anything else. They would leave them all in the armory, right, in a house right by the gatehouse, and that way they'd be able to, and that way they wouldn't have to, you know, carry the weapons all the way back home, their houses and thereby violating shops. Instead, they would leave it in the gatehouse. So, Pamakad Kiyur Bam Oivim, Bradfu Akraham, Vinasulitol, Pizainan, Vinasu Avim Akraham, Dakuze, Haguze, Edze, Yotem, Yamasha Guhaivim, Punashai Kiyu, Shilkos, Ridlum, come on, with Lizainan. So, then what happened? The one time that enemies noticed that they used to always store their weapons right when they entered the city, but that they weren't holding them the whole time. So, instead, what they did is, so the enemies attacked. And when they go, so they run to the armory to get their weapons, and the non-Jew, and then their enemies follow them right in. And then as they're in their haste to grab the weapons, they pushed each other, and they ended up killing each other with their weapons, more so than the enemies did. And then at that point, they made a decree that you are always allowed to return all the way home with your weapons. You don't have to leave them somewhere on the way. You're allowed to bring them all the way home, places they're supposed to be kept. No need to worry about keeping them at a place to minimize the Chil Shabbos for the purposes of weapons. This would imply that you actually have, now we're very much extending the allowance that you had before in terms of how far you're allowed to go with the violation of Tchum or of Hotzah for the purpose of saving a life. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar Lo Kasha Kan Shenitzku Yisrael Tumot Ha'olam Kan Shenitzku Mot Ha'olam Et Atzman. So, right. So, the difference is, when are you allowed to carry and come back with your weapons? So that's all right. You're not allowed to go back with your weapons when the Jews have beaten the rest of the world. That's when you're not allowed to go more to the Zanamo, because there's no reason. What are you scared of? It's fine. But when the non-Jews still rule the world, then you cannot go back you get the full distance, because you never know when enemies are going to attack, and we should be responsible and not risk our lives any more than we have to. The Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Nachrim Shetzaru Al Ayrot Yisrael, and Yod Zan Alehem Mechli Zainan, Bein Mechol and Alehna to Shabbos. So now, we're just discussing war on Shabbos, we're going to discuss another case. So, if non-Jews besiege a Jewish town, you don't go to war with them with weapons, and you don't violate the Shabbos, kill them, rather you wait till after Shabbos. So, it sounds weird. Don't worry. We're gonna address that. If everybody's thinking, wait, this is the case, then like basically, well, we're all gonna die, right? So, actually, interesting story happened with that in the Book of Maccabees, right? This is the apocryphal work, meaning it didn't quite make it to Tanakh, but we do have the versions saved in the it was written down in the Greek Septuagint. So we actually sold a copy of the Maccabees. They actually have a case where they initially many of the Tzukim had the halacha that you're not allowed to fight on Shabbos, and then we have as well as similarly a lot of the Pharisees, the Chashbonaim as well, and then they were besieged on Shabbos, and then they and then it says that Dimnu v'Gamru, and the base in Yagadab, and they ended and declared that actually clearly we made a mistake. Clearly you're allowed to use your weapons on Shabbos, and then they fought back and they stopped being civilly slaughtered by the Greeks. So
yeah.
So as far as this being an issue of fighting of how you respond to war on Shabbos, so it is subject to a large machloket. But I mean, let me rephrase. It was subject to a large machloket between various sects of Judaism and during by a chain period, but nowadays everybody is unanimous in their agreement that you should do whatever you can to save people's lives. So now we're gonna try to figure out what on earth are we talking about with this, with the case of where the city was besieged, and you're not supposed to call Shabbos. We're like, what is going on? Like, what are we talking about? That the non-Jews besieged you, yet you're not going to war with them, defending, you're waiting on for Shabbos. This is very weird. So, what's the case? They came to collect taxes. They didn't really come to, to make war with you. They simply came for some money. But if they came in regards to lives, meaning for your word, they're not just here just to collect, their bounties or taxes, then you do go out to them with your weapons and you violate Shabbos. However, whatever you need to do, you do, because it's important to save everybody's life. It's far more important than dealing with right? So you violate this Shabbos so that we'll be able to celebrate more Shabboses besides this one. So then there's another lacuna, another case that Uviras Mukal is far, but if you happen to be on a border town, a few lobo aliskina vashot, aliskatevakash, shotulamakhizainan, machalan and shabbat. But if you lived on the border, then even if they came only for money, i.e. to raid the for Iskate Makash, or the gift came for to loot you guys and take some money and some of your crops on the way out. But you still go out with them in order to with your weapons. Why? Because if these enemies start encroaching more into the land of Israel, not only will that particular city, have to pay tax and getting ransacked I simply mean monetarily, not being of the dangerous sense. And the point is that if you let the bandits or the non-Jews have their way in the land of Israel, then they'll keep encroaching more and more, and that'll lead to being danger for everybody in the entirety of the land. So therefore, you could also violate the Shabbos, even if they're coming just for money in that case. But if you're in a border town, you take up your weapons. So Amar of Yosef, Bar Yuni, Amar of Nachman, Ubavel, Kiras Mukhlas Faradamya, Matirgama, and Harada. So Rav Yosef Bar Yuni, Sadav Nachman said that Bavel is considered to be the whole area of Bavel is considered to be a border town. Right, so therefore you'd fight back. Yes, it's not just a question of Israel, it's actually a question of everywhere. But to Matirgama, and then they explained actually that meant Not all of Bavel, but rather Naharda, because Naharda was a border town on the edge of Bavel also. So then the point is, the question is let's say the region you're living in. So if you're on a border town and you're worried about incursions from enemies or from bandits, that's when you're worried. But if you happen to have lived in a case where that's not really worrying, just you know they're just coming for some money, then maybe you should pay the protection money and be gone with it. So Darash Rabbi Dustai Damin Beiri. So Rabbi Dustai from the town of Beiri darshan as follows: My Dusti Vagidu David Lemor Hinei Plishtim Mechamim Bekila Behema Shosim Et Hagranah. So this is a story from Shmuel Aleph. So when David was informed that the Plishtim were fighting against Kila and was robbing the treasure floors, then David turns to Hashem and asks him, what am I supposed to do now? So Tana Kila Iris Mukhl Sar Haita. So the Brayta continues. Another Brayta says, the city of Kila was a border town, and even though the Plishtim only came in order to collect money, as it says, Hamas shows him at the ground, as it says that they are ransacking the threshing floors. We'll see if I shall do much more. I left the key to the Plishtim. So we have, they're coming on the Kitab Akash. They're coming to, you know, transact for money, not for lives. Yet David turns and asks God, am I allowed, should I attack? But why is he turning and asking God if he can attack? And then of course God says that you can't. So, but what's the question? Shouldn't he have known that you can attack if this is happening if it's a border town? Why is he asking? If you want to say that well, he could have turned around to basically the Shmuel's at the head of and asked them what he should do. Why is he asking God? Rather, no, he was asking God, will I win this war or not? He didn't want to go to war that there was a doubt he would win or not. So that's why the response is to go and smite the Plishtim and save Kila. So therefore, there's no mention of it being forbidden or not. It's simply told, the only thing that God tells him is you'll be successful in your war. So seemingly, all that David was asking is about the success of the war, not about whether or not you're allowed to go to war on a preemptive war on Shabbos. So obviously, that'll be permitted. Okay. So now we're back to, so based on the words we were talking before about Shechozrin, so that's the source for why doctors and EMTs are allowed to, or other emergency services of similar nature, firefighters and insert here, that they're allowed to return, also for soldiers as well, they're allowed to return. Even on Shabbos, they're allowed to return to their original location. More on that, there's tshuva by Rav Moshe Feinstein and by many others as to the question of when you're allowed to, when you're not allowed to, about whether it's if your consistent job or it's not. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is on the side of you should always be allowed to return because we don't want anybody to hesitate for even one microsecond in the case of life or death. Whereas Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach and Zissel Lezer are not quite as permitting. Again, to have a positive end of the day, please consult Rabbi Kropkin for what your person should do. But just an interesting note that I heard from from Udi Schwartz of Gush. So he's also the second highest rabbi in Tzahal. So he does a lot of interesting shilas. So he was saying that part of the issue is again the question of is it mutter or not mutter is one issue, right? So he says there's many grounds you can say why they're allowed to go back, but it's also it should become an issue of is it the firm thing to do to go or not to go. Because you don't want it to happening. Somebody who's deciding should they or shouldn't they go into the life of the military, right? Which Israel needs. Because of that maybe you'll be called into on duty on Shabbos. You won't be able, unless if you've resolved the issue that night, you won't be able to go home. But it's important also, like, in general, you don't want to prevent people from taking these jobs that are needed, such as, you know, doctors, EMTs, right, and soldiers. Like, we need good people in these jobs. We don't want people who would have done a great job of them, saying, maybe not, knowing that they'll end up, you know, it'll ruin their family life because they can't come home on Shabbos. So that's also a factor that should be taken into account as well. Again, for more particulars of how each of these things work out, please consult your local Orthodox rabbi. In this case, please consult Rabbi Kropkin. So, right. So, and so the Trag is an Israeli, he can consult his his local Rav Yir, I guess. So now it's the Mishnah. Okay, Misha Shah Badera, Vama Vara, Hareza, Hare, Hu Samukla Ir, Uvloita, Kavato Lakath, Loi Kanes, Jerry Mayor. But now we're back to cases of Skum, no longer of Tarchit people's lives, just simply somebody, you know, it's all getting dark, and then they gave up. So about getting theirs, they decided to set up camp somewhere, you know, on the road. Then in the morning, they get up and they notice that they are actually right next to the city, and they couldn't tell because it was too dark. And they're like, "Oh, I'm already here." So do you let it go in or not? So Rabbi Meir says no. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Yikanes. Rabbi Yehuda says you can go in. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Masa Hayav Nikrash Rabbi Tarfon below Mikavet. And Rabbi Yehuda says you can go in. And in fact, they have him once Rabbi Tarfon, and he went in even though he didn't intend to reside in the city. Because he happened to be within the city limits, therefore of the stone, therefore he's allowed to be. He's allowed to have the stone of the city. Tanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Master Rabbi Tarfon Shaya Mahalach Baderech Klash Galol Balan Chutz Leir. So now full version of the story. So we have the Braita where Rabbi Yehuda says that Rabbi Tarfon was walking on the path, and then it got dark, and then he slept outside the city. Shacharit Matzu Rabbi Bakar Amar Lo Rabbi Harei Ha'ir Lefanecha Yikanes. So what was the so what happened the next morning is after he went to sleep outside, he woke up, he woke in the morning by some shepherds. He said, "Rebbe, you know that the city is right there, go ahead and head on in." So he goes inside, and then he sat in his medrash and he expounded the whole day through, which means that you're allowed to enter. Even if you didn't realize you're within the tchum, as long as you notice later, that's sufficient. So the Gemara said, "Bisham Ra'ya, is that really a proof? Shem Belivo Haita, but Midrash Move Lavatov Kumohaya. Is that really a really good proof? Maybe he had in the back of his, maybe he had in his mind. Like, I hope that I'm within the city. I don't know." When he went to sleep, and he just simply couldn't calculate it. And in the morning, that's when he figured out that he actually was in the slum of the city. Or you could say that maybe the base Midrash happened to be within the 2000 of where he happened to have been sleeping that night. So therefore, that's not necessarily a good proof. Okay, now next mission. Again, a case of where you went to sleep. The question of where is your tchum drawn based on that point. So Misha Yashan, Baderech, Voidam, Shachashecha. Somebody went to sleep and didn't know that night had fallen. Basically, let's say he went for an afternoon nap and he's like, I'll make it back home in time for Shabbos. And then he only wakes up and it's already dark and he's like, oh no, now what? So what's the status? So Yeshua Paim Amach Aruach, Tavir Rabbi Yochanan Menuri. Rabbi Menuri says you get to the amo from where you went to sleep, no problems. But some omrim amo el arba amo. Or some say you only get four amo. Right, the four around you, and then Rabbi Elazar Omer who empems on. Rabbi Elazar says not only do you get dalad amo, but rather you're in the middle of the dalad amo. So that means you get two amo to your right, two amo to your left, two amo in front, two amo behind you. But not that you actually get four in any direction you pick. Rather, you only get two with you at the center. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Leizo Ruach Shirtzu Yelech. So Rabbi Yehuda says you get every direction you want to go in. Meaning you can get the four amot in any direction, and you don't lose out by having slept through. And so there the machloka there would be based on, you know, you need to be awake in order to determine or automatically. If you're asleep, is it automatically determined for you or not? So, Umoja Rabbi Yehuda, Shim Birer Lo, She'eni Yechol La'achzorbo. But Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer that if you had decided the way you're going to draw your Dalet Amot, you can't redo it, right? So this is like Rabbi Eliezer says, you get two Amot and that's it, and you can't change it. Similarly here, we say that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you got to pick the direction, but once you pick the direction, you said, I want to go, you know, four Amot east. That's all you get. You can't keep changing your minds throughout Shabbos. You got to pick once. That's it. Okay. So, right. So again, you got to pick your Dalet Amot. Again, that means you get again moderate distances. That's basically just short, that's roughly 2 meters. For how the exact amount will work out, we'll get to that more when the Gemara talks about how to actually just how to calculate more precisely. But for now, we'll operate on that. When we get to the actual thing, we will discuss the case of how you get in the corners and then how that affects the drawing of your direction as well. Again, we will get to that as the Gemara mentions it. So now we're going to another case. Now there's two people who got stuck. So Miksan Amotav Shalzeh, Bedok Amotav Shalzeh, Mavim Ve'Ochlem Ve'Emsa. Ulevad, and then turn the page, Ulevad Shalo Yotzi, Metoch Shalo, Latoch Shal Chavero. So there's two people who are on the who are on a journey, and then they had to set up camp. Yeah, each of them are only getting Dalet Amot. So in this case, or at least at the camp purposes of carrying, at the very least, they only have four Amot. So what happens is each of them, sit down, and then their four Amot overlap. So we say that each of them can bring their food and they can eat in the middle, but they have to be careful that neither of them. If they share food, be careful that they don't end up passing the food past the dalet amot that are permitted to them. So, let's see if we have a. I seem to recall it being some nice pictures in the in Parish Chai. One moment, I'll try and share them. Let me see if I did a little too quickly, so I missed it. One moment. Yeah, here we go. We have some nice pictures here about the. About here we are. Okay, so everybody sees here the but we've got the little drawings of how the swim is working. We have this person of the two amot all around him. Okay, again, we're not discussing how it squares off or not. That's not what we're discussing yet in this stage of the Mishnah and Gemara. Okay, then we talk about the case of with your dalet amot. When they meet up. So again, we have a nice little Venn diagram. So you're allowed to eat in the place where everybody sees a little olive. That's the place that you're allowed to eat. Let me zoom in a bit more. So there we go. Maybe it's a little better, right? So the Venn diagram, places you're allowed to eat, and then everything is all good fun. So Hayu Shlosha of Emsai Muvla Ben Ahem. There's three people, and they set themselves up in a row. And the way it works is that the person in the middle, as you can see, so his Venn diagram can overlap with those people on the right and on the left. But the people on the right and on the left, they can't share with each other because their Dalamo don't overlap at all. In theory, if they sat closer together in a triangle, in theory, they could have all potentially been able to eat together, but that's not what they decided to do. So that's how they set up. So this is what it'll end up being. Okay, so now I'm going to stop sharing for now until we get to more cases that require it.
It looks like the COVID social distancing. How far away we have to be from each other?
Yeah, but they're in violation. The circles are overlapping, so they're no good.
No, I appreciate that. I'm just saying, in this day and age, it's almost that's what the first thing you think about. If we'd learned this 7.5 years ago, we would have never thought about that.
Agreed. And also another fun thing is that normally people aren't so when people daven, you're supposed to make sure that you have dalet amot around you are empty.
Yes.
Right? For purposes of focusing. So the only time that's ever happened to me is during COVID, because then everybody's actually dalet amot away from each other.
Very, very machmir about this now.
We're very machmir about it now, yes. And we follow the opinion of not only two amot with you in the middle, brother, it's four amot all around. So we're really machmir. Okay. So now we're back to the Gemara. Right. So the question is, how do you establish your tchum and how does this work? So we're also good. So my Rabba, Micah Saba, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri, Rabba asked, what is Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri's opinion about, where he said, again, so back in the Mishnah, where he said that if he didn't know where it is, that he automatically gets the tchum thing. Why does he hold that? How does he get the opinion from the Sefer Kesavar? Chesed Hefker Konin Shritah. So he says things that have no owners, they automatically acquire tchum, which implies that, meaning if items that don't have any owners, so they automatically get the 2,000 amot around them. But similarly, so implication being, just like he says that that's the case for for humans in the Mishnah, therefore he would say the same thing for items. Right, just like the human who had no intent to get 2,000 amos. Similarly, the item who has that has no intent will get 2,000 amos by acquiring its resting place. So uvedin udeliflo b'kelim. So really, Rabbi Yochanan Uri should have disagreed with Chachamim even about kelim. V'ha l'makom adliba adam l'divah kochon derabana. So really, he argues in both. And why we have another argument here about man, opposed to about utensils, show the strength of the Chachamim in terms of their in terms of their ability to forbid things. The Afagav the Ikel Neymar Hoil V'Neyor Kana Yashanami Kana Kamash Malan Dela. Really, could have said that just like when a person was awake, he would have been Kona. If he's sleeping, it also works. So Kamash Malan, rather, instead, learn out that the Chachamim don't believe that, and instead, you'll actually end up being. If you were asleep at the onset of Shabbos, you'll actually have missed out. So, Odilma, was another option. Odilma, Kasevra, Rabbi Yochanan Benuri, Ba'alma, Chesed Hefker, Ein Kohen Shita. Or maybe, Rabbi Yochanan's opinion in general is, actually, items that don't have any owners, they don't get 2,000 amot around wherever they're located. They're not Kohen Shita on their own. They can't acquire a tchum. You need a person to do that. Maybe you'd say here, because the person could have woken up, meaning items never have kavana. So therefore, there's no way for them to get 2,000 amot on their own without a person affecting them. For a human being, then he could have woken up and declared it. Therefore, we'll let it be as if he had. Amar of Yosef. So what is Rabbi Yochanan's opinion? So Amar Rabbi, and what's his and why? So Amar Rabbi Yosef, is going to try and give the proof. Tashma, let's see what it is. Shem Shiyadim Merv Yom Tov Yesh Lan Alpain Amal Kol Ruach. Yom Tov Harehein Keragle Kol Adam. So if rain had fallen before Yom Tov, then the water has 2,000 amot from where it landed, that you're allowed to carry it. The Yom Tov, but if it fell on Yom Tov, Harehein Keragle Kol Adam. But if it fell on Yom Tov itself, then it gets the full, then they get, whoever picks them up, that's how far they get. If you wanted to say, the Reuel Chamanuri says that those items, 2,000 amot, so then who is, assuming that they were all this before Shabbos, so that means that the opinion is Rabbi Yochanan Uri, and works that great. But if you want to say that all those items don't get 2,000 amot around them, Amani, then who's that opinion? Lower Rabbi Yochanan and Lower Banan. Then it's neither Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Banan who'll say that that's okay. So what is it? Yativ Abayim Kamar La Lahashmaita. So Abayim said down and recited as follows. Amarlay. Rav Safra, Labayas, then Rav Safra said to Bayan, Vajamabik Shemim Hasmuk on the Iraskinan, Vashay Ir, Atamalayu. But no, maybe you could say that it's different here because it's not an issue about Chatzai Hefker, it's an issue about wonderless items. Rather, it's a rain that fell near a city and the people in the city had in mind, and that's why it worked. Marlay, Sagadad, Devdan, Borshal Yachid, Karagla Yachid, Shalotair, Karagotair, Shalay Baba, Karagla Mamale. Somebody said to him, no, that's not possible. You shouldn't think that way, because Mishnah states that an individual's cistern, so his water is according to him. If it's the city cistern, then it goes according to the tchum of that city. But if it's a cistern or well designed for the people who came to Israel from Bavel, then it'll follow whichever individual happens to be picking it up, which means that we're allowing it for a case of it not being based on the water itself determining the location. Rather, it's determined based on the person, not based on the water. So the water isn't actually establishing its own anything. It's all based on the people here. But Tanya, also learned in Breita. We also say that if a If a cistern is communally owned, it gets 2,000 amot in every direction, which has nothing to do with anybody who owns it. Gosh, how does that work? How is it that we say in general it follows the individual or the group that owns it? Yet, in this case, we say that it simply gets 2,000 amot of relevant to people. Rather, the opinion where we say that it gets 2,000 amot around it, that is Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, so essentially a half care. Those objects acquire residence, whereas the latter case, where we say that it doesn't, where the person who draws it is based on that, that must be the Chachamim's opinion, because they don't think that illness items can have any, or have any, of themselves. They only have it based on when a person finally touches them or puts mind to them. So then, by thank you for Yosef, and he explained the story from what we mentioned before. Amar lei, v'amai lo tema le megufa. So then, Rav Yosef said, why didn't you answer him from the Braita itself? Why are you bringing in a separate Braita? Yisak adatib, shonim basmukim le'iras kinan, ha yesh sanapayim amal kol ruach. If you're talking about the fact that there's water that's near the city, then how can you say they get 2,000 amot in each direction? Should have said, if it said 2,000 amot, it shouldn't have said 2,000 amot, the water 2,000 amot. It should have said that the water is like the people of the city. Why is it saying 2,000 amot? Rather, that's to teach you that the inhabitants don't actually acquire the rights of the water, rather than the water acquires its own rights according to the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri. Marmar, Biyom Tov, Harehem, Gregla Kol Adam. So now we're examining what we mentioned before, that we say that Biyom Tov, water is according to whoever happens to pick it up. Amai, Likne Shvita Bokyonos. How is the case? Why did you say that the water acquired residence when it was in the ocean, before the water evaporated and turned into rain, into clouds and into rain before it landed? Right? Rather, must it be Karbi Lezer? Rather, this branch is not taught according to Karbi Lezer. It says that all the water in the world comes from the oceans, meaning evaporated water. The question of how rainwater works is subject to debate in Masechet Ta'anit. Some of them are a little more fantastic than others. For more on which ones those are, please see Masechet Ta'anit. So, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Hatzav Avim Shnikashru Me'er Yom Tov Askinah. So, what are we saying here? Why is it not considered to be the tchum of the ocean, which would oftentimes not reach all the way inland? Rather, we say that the water had already evaporated into clouds before Yom Tov. Therefore, the water is already in the clouds, and therefore you can't say it's home with the rest of the ocean. But Dil Mahanach Azli, Mahanach Achrinin Inu. Let's just say these are the same clouds that you saw in Erev on right before Shabbat Yom Tov. Maybe there's new clouds, like I do pretty quickly. No, rather, there must be an identifying cloud about these particular ones. It's a very, they're tracking it with a radar. They know this was hurricane X, Y, or Z, or that, they simply saw, like, they noticed that, wow, that cloud looks just like a, I don't know, looks like a cow, maybe looks like a dragon. And then they were tracking it from before Yom Tov into Yom Tov, or before Shabbos, and that's how they knew where it was. So, by Ema, I have a suffix to Devraham, a suffix to Devraham Hakel. Or you can say that this is all in regards to a suffix made to Rabbanan. Therefore, when a suffix to Rabbanan, we follow the Makel opinion of allowing you to use the water that comes out of the clouds. So now they mentioned that the water is currently in clouds. But Likne Shvita Ba'avim. So why don't you say that they were Kona Shvita when they were clouds? Rather, we learn from here. I remember a discussion from about a week or so ago about is there such a thing as tchum if you're 10 above the ground or not? And seemingly this means that since the clouds are very high, are definitely more than 10 tfachim, they're probably a kilometer or more above the ground. So then, of course, You know, they're not going to. So the Yish Kumin, like Nishi, to Avim, because if you said there was Kumin above 10, then the Klaz themselves should create their own problems. So rather, you could say back that yes, in general, there is an issue of someone above 10 Amot. Here, the issue is that because it's absorbed in the clouds, therefore it doesn't acquire shvita, because clouds are not water, and therefore you'd say that they don't acquire shvita at that point. So if this is the case, we've got a problem now. Because kol shekein havu lu nola d'asiri. If you want to say that it could have changed state, now it's all going to be asrei d'rabbanan because it was created on Yom Tov, and therefore there's no way that you could ever benefit from it. So, Maya ba'avim ma'idi na'idi. Rather, what's the issue is that the water in the clouds is definitely moving. Ashadat lahaki achiyamas na'ilo lo'lishulcha maya kianas na'im ma'idi na'idi. V'tanya n'harad moshkin ma'ino tanovin harei hank karlikol adam. So, but the water in the clouds is in constant motion. That's why it wouldn't work. So then Gemara says, and now that we figured out that that's the reason why, so therefore then you should then now we solve then we actually can solve our previous issue. What do we do about the oceans? We say oceans are also no problem because ocean and the water in the ocean is also constantly in motion. And there's a ton of bright out that we say that flowing waters and springs are they have because they're in motion. They're like the legs of whoever happens to be, and that's our conclusion. So let's go back and talk a little bit about what we got today. So again, we were talking about questions of Tchumen. So we started off the day returning to what we've been speaking about yesterday about the person who'd gone out to save people and how much distance he gets. And then we discussed the fact that actually there's a kind of by the border towns that actually in cases of where it's dangerous that they are allowed to carry their weapons as well. So that would be a much more generous understanding of what we're allowed to do in terms of returning back to where we are. So which would be a very very helpful thing for doctors and soldiers returning home on Shabbat and Yom Tov, they had to go out to save somebody again, and all other emergency people would be helping time for emergency. Then we went and started talking about the cases about tchum, about if you acquired it accidentally or not, does it work or not, or do you actually have intent that I'm going to be in the city or this location, and if you fell asleep, would that ruin it or not? We also then started discussing the case of what do we do about items that are ownerless. Do they get 2,000 amot on their own? Do they not get 2,000 amot on their own? We discussed the case of water. Is the water does water get its own area or not? And then we start trying to figure out what's the case with rainwater and moving and other types of water. So first we made the case of the ocean. We said that's true that all water that rains on Shabbat Yom Tov should be problematic because it has moved once 2,000 amot, and therefore you should have an issue. And then we were trying to figure out how clouds worked, how clouds affect everything. Then seeing, you know, how are the clouds moving, clouds not moving, can we tell, can we not tell? And then we concluded at the end of the day that we had suggested maybe it's because the water is in the clouds is a different form. Then we said that you don't want to say that the water has changed to an entirely new form. If you say that it's changed in that sense, then you're running into the nolad. And then everything would be us into our button, so that would be its own big problem. So we don't want to go that route. So instead we say, what's the whole reason why clouds and rainwater are not considered to be a problem? We say that once items in motion, it can't kona shvita. Once an item's in motion, it simply has nothing to do with getting its own tchum, this inanimate object, it can't get a tchum while it's in motion. And instead, whoever picks it up, that person is picking it up will determine the tchum. That's how we'll solve the issue of rainwater or flowing water, which is also a very cool thing to know in terms of for people using their tap water, depending on where it comes from. If it doesn't come from a very local reservoir, let's say it comes from a very long pipe, it's very far away. So the fact that it's that's constantly in motion would help in terms of tzum to allow you to drink water that comes out of your pipes, as opposed to where it may be problematic in different circumstances. Okay, so that's it. Zach, have any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go down.
Go on.
My pleasure. Yeah, everybody.
Have a good day.
Thank you.